And then this is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development, Ways and Means, Joint Ways and Means. Representing Legislative Fiscal Office, Robin Lamont, and Suki Huerta is the Subcommittee Assistant. We're continuing on with public hearings on Senate Bill 5510, which is the Economic and Community Development Department. And Mr. Scott has a couple of items of carryover from the other day, including answers to questions from Thursday. And Mr. Scott, if you'd like to go ahead, I think there's some handouts.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Scott. I'm the director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Maybe I could begin by the one piece that we had been asked for that we hadn't responded to was Senator Yee's request from last week to that I would comment on the Secretary of State's audit report that you heard a report on last week. You have, I think, copies of my written response to the auditors that are published with the audit report itself. Essentially, I guess I would make two or three points about it. First of all, is that we essentially are in agreement with the recommendations of the audit report, we have had some considerable discussion with both the auditors and with administrative services about ways to do that. I guess I'd say the one respect in which we don't think it's going to be possible to exactly follow through on the recommendation of the audit report is to reduce the actual number of things we're measuring that in order to comply with I think the directives we have from statute and what people are interested in, we think we need to track everything that we have proposed to begin tracking next biennium. However, we do agree that it's that we can reformat the way we do that so that we report a smaller in a way that focuses on a smaller number of the performance measures that are people are most interested in, and then have the rest as backup as it's needed. The second comment that I would make, or maybe I should say, with regard to the findings, there are really two comments. One is that the thing where we feel the auditors were particularly helpful is in pointing out that when we talk about job creation, we've fallen into the trap that your piggy bank here, I think, is designed to forestall, which is that people who are close to the economic development business tend to understand that the only way you can report impact on job creation is to report jobs proposed to be created or predicted to be created at the time that assistance is provided to a company, and that those numbers can be verified down the road, but it often is a matter of years before the time has elapsed that the company was asked to predict the jobs in, and that if I think we will eliminate confusion if we're careful in the future to always make it clear to everybody that that's what we're reporting, not jobs that have actually materialized, because the period we're reporting for is the period for when we provided the assistance, not the period in which the jobs in most cases are actually appear.
Dr. Scott, is this relative to Appendix A and the 19 particular project numbers there, those grants or awards, are those, is that the problem with regard to those particular issues? Were those jobs to be created at a later time? Or was it your understanding that relative to the 19 selected case studies, that those were in fact jobs that were supposed to have been created right then and would be reported in the 6 month, 24 month time period?
Mr. Chair, as the auditors note in their report, they report how many jobs are there over various periods. Depending on the program, different ones of these particular cases were expected to produce jobs in either 2 or 3 years from the date of the award. The auditors have reported up to 24 months. That's, I think, most of the discrepancy is around that issue. That is our finding on our review of these files is that for those that we're sure we've got the right case identified, because we don't have the same access the auditors did to the employment files, but where we're confident we've got the right company, we think in those cases where the time has in fact elapsed, that collectively, if you add them all up, more jobs have been created than the company said they would. And then in the other cases, there appears to be some likelihood that they may get there. There's one other issue involved in that discrepancy, which is that some of the award recipients are not the same entities where the jobs were predicted to be created, and the auditors did not get access to the companies that would have created the jobs. So I think those essentially just have to be thrown out as far as this analysis is concerned. I think there were three of those.
Yeah, I need to understand how that works. The jobs were not created by the awarded beneficiary of the department's fiscal award, financial award, and someone else was the beneficiary, or someone else is actually tracking and maintaining the jobs?
No, Mr. Chairman, typically the situation where that occurs, where we report jobs that would be created that aren't expected to be created by the recipient, would be in, for instance, a special public works fund or port revolving fund award to a local municipality or port district that would be for infrastructure in an industrial park, and the jobs would be created by a company that's located there rather than by the award recipient, which is the local government entity.
In fact, some of the 25 recipients, 25 firms that were pulled for this sample, port districts, is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, we believe that's correct. And Mr. Chairman, I guess I would say we don't disagree in any way with the auditor's recommendation for what we should be doing. However, I guess the comment I want to make is that we believe that if we're very clear about what we're counting and what time period we expect the jobs to appear over, that's the way we will have to verify these numbers. And at least so far, our analysis, as we have gone back over our files of cases that we've closed out the period, we believe that on average, the companies are creating more jobs in total than they said they were going to at the beginning.
Representative Johnson?
The auditor's report notwithstanding, how about just some spot checks for verification? One of the questions that I asked you was provide a list of jobs by program and wage level for Columbia and Clatsop County. And I think that your response is this little chart. I didn't see the wages on here, but maybe I just missed it. But my curiosity still is that when there's something as much in error as Acrotech Aviation, where you say proposed new jobs 60, proposed retained jobs 100, for a total proposed of 160, and they've gone broke. There are no jobs. No company exists. They defaulted on $100,000. How does that get, I mean, that's one you know about. You don't even have to go track it. But what I'm looking for is some spot checking that your RDOs do. They've been involved in projects. They would have the ability on the ground to go back out and just spot check and report back in information. Is that a possibility?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, of course it is. And in fact, we are doing that. The challenge is in trying to figure out what to report and when, and do we want to keep revising numbers that have already been reported for a specific period. After wrestling with this subject at some length in the interim, I think the conclusion is that we should stick with numbers that we have reported, but institute, which we're in the process of doing, a systematic, as you say, spot check. And we haven't quite determined yet whether we're going to sample maybe about a third, or maybe we've kind of are in lately in discussions of maybe we ought to just check them all, and how expensive would that really be, but we're still shaking that down. And then the question is, do we kind of report back and say that our audit or our validation procedure or whatever has identified that for jobs that were predicted in 1998 to be created, you know, there have been a net of so many more or so many less jobs created, and do that by program, or should we actually go back and keep adjusting those prior numbers as information materializes?
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Ms. Johnson.
I'm going to assume that unless there's something on this chart I don't see, that the salaries aren't on here. Because my question was provide a list of jobs by program and wage level for Columbia and Clatsop County. And you said the information's attached. And we have this chart that appears to be extracted out of another larger document. And I don't see the salaries on here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we'll provide you what we have. I'm sorry that we're getting a little ragged here. We've had a great deal of work to do, and if we didn't do it, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know that, and I don't want to keep chasing you after numbers that may or may not exist. I guess the point that I think Senator Yee and I have been trying to make is that we're trying to figure out, for the money spent, how many jobs are created and at what level of compensation. And that's what we're looking for. I don't want to send you chasing after numbers that may not exist.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, let me just explain what does exist. This is a report writer that selects information out of a database that in which there are supposed to be wage numbers. There's a field for wage levels in every case. We don't get wage levels in every case, and this list would tend to be particularly spotty because the banks are not very good about getting that information and giving it to us. However, we would have wage levels for a lot of these jobs, and we will provide that for you.
Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chair Butler. I think Representative Johnson raises an excellent point in trying to figure out what the number of jobs created or retained is and the salaries that go with that. And as I understand, part of the rationale for creating those numbers is because this body wanted to know what those were. And so I guess my recommendation would be as we move forward from here and we figure out what is a criteria that works for this body and a reporting format that does work for this body. The dilemma I have with going back is once the funds are expended, it's very difficult to get a company to report the information, particularly when they're in compliance with all other components of their agreement. And I'm not sure that the department would have the teeth in this agreement to go back and call a loan or a grant in default simply because they didn't report the information. And so my recommendation on this is we need to put a new standard in place that meets the objectives of this body. And for the future, you know, we have a very precise tool in place that meets our needs.
Mr.
Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess respectfully, I take exception to what my good colleague from Eastern Oregon has just shared. I've taken commercial loans from banks, and those documents are absolutely binding, and failure to perform on any of those is responded to by a call on the loan. I don't know why the state of Oregon should be making loans any less responsibly than lending institutions. Now, if we're making accommodation on interest rate and we're making accommodation on availability of capital, then it seems to me that at a minimum, anybody who's a beneficiary of that kind of very favorable loan would have to acknowledge, particularly if it was a term of the contract, that they had to report jobs and they had to report salary levels. And I could anticipate that they might want to shield those for proprietary reasons and maybe have them reported in the aggregate. But there should be absolutely no reason why the state of Oregon should be any less rigorous in our paperwork requirements than any other lender, particularly when we're making accommodation on availability of capital and rate.
I don't disagree at all with what you're saying. What I'm saying is it's very difficult for those companies for us to mandate that of them or to call them in default.
That's the problem.
That's right.
There's no political will to say you're in default, we're calling your loan.
Well, and I think it'd be very difficult to call a loan into default when they're meeting all other criteria in their loan agreement.
You don't know my bank.
Well, when they're meeting their cash flow requirements and they're submitting their annual financial statements and they're making their payments on the first of every month, I think it'd be very difficult to go back and say you're now in default because you won't share with us how many employees you have. So somehow we need to structure that so we can do that.
Mr. Chairman.
Let me just say this. One of the things that was indicated the other day is this information has not been totally accessed by the department, and I think there was a comment made that you just submit the name of the company and the Department of Employment will give you a goodly chunk of the information. Now, I understand Mr. Lattimore was able to get more information relative to the actual job level, and that was one of the wage level annual wage level, firm's annual average wage level. I think that was something that he indicated that he was able to get, that maybe the department wasn't able to get, but it's my understanding that you can go back and get, by submitting to the Department of Employment, a state agency can get the actual number of employees. Bill?
Mr. Chairman, I guess, first of all, I kind of want to speak to the whole subject. The last point I wanted to make here is that, as I believe the subcommittee understands, the department undertook a thoroughgoing review of our performance measures and are planning to put in place a new system for collection of all this information. And as of the first of the new biennium, we believe that we can dramatically upgrade the quality of the wage information that we collect along the lines that Representative Johnson was suggesting. And I think at this point we have a commitment to do it, our commission has a commitment to do it, and I don't think further action from the legislature along the lines Representative Smith suggested is necessary, because we are definitely planning to go there. On the subject of the Employment Department data, we're in pretty extensive discussions with them. We do not have access to company-specific information. The only thing at this point we can get from them is we can submit a kind of a list of companies and get aggregate data back if it's a long enough list, or can compare it to peer groups and some of those kind of things for analytical purposes. What we are planning to institute is that each company that we assist as part of the application form would essentially as part of its application, request the employment department to provide us whatever information, you know, is specified in that agreement, and then we would then be able to get access to that information. But we're kind of in negotiation about exactly how to do that with the employment department now. The employment department, the auditors originally had suggested we seek legislation getting a blanket, you know, permission. The employment department is very reluctant to go there, and we think it's possible for us to get what we need without, and in a way that the companies actually consent to, rather than giving us information that potentially a company, we might be able to get data that a company didn't know we were going to be able to get.
Senator, do you recognize?
Mr. Chairman, I think the reason we want performance measure is we want to be able to evaluate the success of the program. But if you give us projected jobs to be created and not verify it and just give us projection, it doesn't tell us what is the performance or the result of the job. And if you don't tell us the wage level, it really doesn't give us the quality of your performance. If you just give us numbers, just give us quantity without giving us the quality, it really doesn't tell us very much. And it doesn't tell us whether this is a wise investment of tax dollars or not. So we need to have verified jobs created for the program, the wage level, and we also need to have the source of your data. You gave us a whole sheet of numbers, but you didn't tell us what's the source of the data, what methodology do you use, what kind of verification it is to tell us what is actual jobs created. It doesn't tell us anything. It's just a waste of our time and a waste of your time for us to look at numbers that doesn't tell us anything. So I agree with Representative Johnson. It has to be monitored and it has to be verified so we get real numbers so we can see what is the real performance. And I know the auditor recommended that you seek legislation to ask for the authority to look into the unemployment claims of the workers. And you say that's a problem?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, yes. The Employment Department is very resistant to the idea of broadening access to their files without company-specific permission. We believe that all the information you're interested in is information we can obtain if we properly document our assistance to the companies in such a way that they request that we be given access to the information at the time they receive the assistance from us. So we agree with the point you're making that the data need to be verified and that we do that using the numbers that the companies report to the employment department. Although our experience is that those numbers aren't different from the ones they report to us, the problem of the time lag, though, won't go away. That is, the verification will inevitably have to occur months, or really in most cases, 1 or 2 or 3 years after the service is provided. So there's a lag built in. Our belief has always been that it's important to have an estimate at the time we provide assistance of what is going to be the result of that assistance. What we're adding to that is to go back and verify after the time period for creating jobs has elapsed, you know, what the job creation was, and we can then report on that, you know, how that differs from the initial projection, which inevitably it will be different because companies aren't perfect at predicting what they're going to do. All the studies we've had done in the past have shown more jobs created total than what we originally reported total. But we've never had a comprehensive across-the-board all programs that look at that. And what we're committing to do is to do that on a routine basis.
So your results, if you're estimating that 10 jobs will be created, actually what you're saying is that maybe 12 jobs are actually created in part of a spinoff on an input-output kind of arrangement?
Mr. Chair, in those situations where we've had a study after the fact, it has always found something like that to be true. But like I say, we haven't had a consistent methodology. We haven't done it in all programs. So we don't know.
Representative Smith is recognized.
Chair Butler. I agree with Senator Yee and Representative Johnson on what they're saying. The issue I have is for practicality's sake, it's very difficult once those funds are expended to gather that information. They just don't provide it. And I'm going to throw something.
Smith, they don't provide it.
The company. Let me give an example.
The company that you've loaned to,
sure.
When you come back with a follow-up, they would say, they would just ignore it.
Let me give you an example. A company is on a five-year term, working capital, permanent working capital. They're now into their third year on this loan. They owe $75,000 of a $150,000 loan. They know you're not going to call them in default because they don't return that survey. They know you're not going to go through that headache over a one-sheet piece of paper. And so that's, for all points and purposes, that's the issue of why we're not getting this information. In my personal profession, I'm not able to gather that information. I'm going to throw out an idea, though. You are allowed to brainstorm on the board.
Yeah,
I'm going to throw this out.
Yeah.
Perhaps, and I know this department's not going to like it, but I'm still going to brainstorm. Perhaps the Department of Revenue could have a one-sheet piece of paper that requests this information and is attached to their annual income tax statement, and then that sheet of paper is forwarded then to the department. That allows for a little bit more teeth to gather this information, and it's a tool that could be used, and the company would be required then annually to submit that as part of a complete income tax return.
Give me the sheet. Who is it submitted to? Is it submitted back to the department?
Well, maybe
at the time of the loan?
Maybe the department has their survey in place that says we want the number of jobs created, retained, average annual wage, in whatever other vital information there is, and annually as they turn in their income tax, they also complete that form, the page is taken out and sent to the department.
Oh,
I'm just trying to figure out how
I
to put teeth in that collection.
Actually, an additional sheet on an income tax return, which would be submitted by the Department of Revenue back over to the department.
Correct. And I'm just brainstorming.
And I appreciate that brainstorm. I guess my take on that is that you can have a sheet submitted on behalf of the department. The department could actually take a waiver of the right to the information that a person would sign, that the company would sign when they were in the process of taking out the loan, which would give the department the right to receive copies of the tax returns from the tax preparer or from the actual Department of Revenue. However, the Department of Revenue, unless you're a tax practitioner, that'd be a kind of a forms request.
And I guess my thought is that once the form's received, they take it out of their file.
That puts the burden on the Department of Revenue to come up with a form that would be copied or yanked from a tax return and submitted. And it also puts the burden back on the company to have included that form actually with the filed tax return. I'm wondering if, you know, using, I'm sure there's an attorney in the department somewhere that you could use, an attorney can submit a form signed by the attorney authorizing the Department of Revenue to allow the attorney to gain access to a copy of the tax return. So forms receipt, or a forms request, actual Department of Revenue forms request. Senator Farnell?
It just seems like deja vu. Didn't we talk about this morning the watchers? I've always been at a committee, so I often do the same thing. It's interesting how these webs we weave as we let something happen. I've always opposed the state being in the lending business. And there's people in the private sector that do lending, and the state ought to be able to help in other ways. But when we do lending, then we try to figure out ways to make it work, and we really aren't and shouldn't be in the lending business. There's banks that do that.
And I'm going to say straight out that we do a kind of a poor job in preparing the contract for these lending services, because we don't even have boilerplate language in a lot of the work that we do. And I'm looking at that and saying we're paying virtually millions of dollars in attorney's fees, and we're not getting boilerplate and language in the contract. So, I mean, here's a case in point, and I'm not referring to, because I haven't seen any of your contracts, but I would think that a lending contract with the department, which has any kind of a lending relationship over a very short period or a lengthy period of time, would have some ability to reach out and say, you will provide us with information relative to your employment, and you will provide us information relative to your income tax return. I don't know. I know that
they do.
They do?
They do. The dilemma is it's in the gathering of that information. Once that loan is closed, because these are gap financers, and you're not the lender of deposit, or the money.
Right.
These companies, they just, I hate to say, they almost laugh at some of those loan conditions, because they know they're only borrowing from you once. Where with your traditional lender, they're coming back.
Right.
Multiple times to renew their line.
Long-term relationship.
Yeah.
Senator,
I thought I read the auditor's report that at the time of the loan, they should have a list of their payroll, the employee, the wages, and 6 months later, the company should submit a list of their employee and wages.
I think that's what Representative Smith is saying. Mm-hmm. They should do that, but it's difficult to do that because your relationship, if they needed $100,000 to close a $350,000 deal, your relationship with them to assist with the bridge financing to get that $100,000, it's over and done with. Their long-term relationship will be with their lender of first resort, their bank or other depository institution where they have all of that long-term relationship.
But if that's the condition of the loan, shouldn't they comply with the condition?
Should comply. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Should comply. They have a legal obligation to comply.
Right.
The question is, how hard are you going to be on them if they don't comply?
You could go to the employment division for the unemployment claims so that it will show the people who are unemployed and not on the payroll of the company they promised to have.
I think that trying to make ourselves a party to the Department of Employment's records, the Department of Employment would resist that vigorously, very vigorously.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Bill.
I just want to make our position clear. Is we believe we can get the information from the companies, and our experience is that while Representative Smith may be correct that just sending them a survey doesn't necessarily mean they're going to send it back. But if we call them and we can get the information and they're obligated to give it to us now, the only thing we need that we don't have is the company request to the employment department to allow us to review their record, and we believe we have identified a system for doing that. So we don't see there being a problem with us complying with the recommendation of the auditors here, and we've got that system in the works.
Release up front, is that what that is?
Yes, essentially, it's a release up front.
And they will give you, I noticed the auditor was able to get not just the number of jobs that were involved, the auditors, through the Secretary of State's office, was able to get total number of employment and the average wages actually paid. And that's as an auditor.
Mr. Chair, the Secretary of State's Auditor's Office has a very broad authority in their statute that we don't have anything like that. However, we think it's possible to get from the companies at the time of the award something that's as broad as we need. There is one other issue, which is that, which I'd forgotten about, was in a couple of the cases that are in this sample here, you actually have issues where the company has dropped in employment because they sold off another division that didn't have anything to do with the part that we're creating. So once you get into these numbers, it's very tricky to do the to do the analysis. But we think we can do everything I think the committee wants us to do in terms of being able to have data that can be verified and will over time be verified.
Fairly specific when you go into it, but if they bifurcate and divide up into three divisions, then you might have the authorization for division for the master division, but not a division, a subset of that that's been divided off at a later time. You don't have any authorization over that subdivision.
Mr. Chair, that's the kind of thing we're working with the Employment Department on now, is sort of how do we, you know, and I'm trying to work with our lawyers on how do we actually draft this so that it will give us access to the information we need without giving us overly broad access to information a company that we don't really have any reason to need from a company.
I thought it was kind of interesting. One of the reporting parties, however, did say that they could gain access just by going to the Department of Employment and giving the name of the company and asking how many people were employed in any calendar quarter, and that information was given back to that particular division. That was the comment of one of the participants here. Not on the record, but afterwards. Yes, Representative Smith.
Chair Butler, I'm going to put you on the spot. On the spot, Mr. Scott. If you had a loan out, $150,000 loan, been paying now, the 60-month term, been paying 36 of those months, has an outstanding balance of $50,000 on a $150,000 credit, met all other conditions, but refused to supply job creation data. Would you call the loan into default?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we've never been confronted with a company that was that uncooperative. It isn't necessarily, if you send them a request, they won't necessarily jump and send it right back. But our experience is that once you get over the inconvenience hurdle and you get in their face, that they aren't that reluctant to give us the information that we really need to have from them.
My take is that they go, oh, fine, 24, 12, and 20,000 a year. Sign it, and off they go. That's my take. And I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just trying to be honest.
Get the form filled out and get it back as best you can. Here, Susie, fill this form out, give it back to them. She says, well, what are the numbers? And you say, well, let's see. And you start grabbing them out of the air, and pretty soon you got it. Yes, I'm sorry.
That's okay. You've just added to exactly where I was. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking that there's no reason why we couldn't ask someone as a contingency of getting a loan to be required to provide this information. But the more information asked to be provided, you have no way to substantiate it anyway. So you can, like you say, simply
well,
can just grab them.
And, you know, the feel is that there may be more jobs, whereas the Secretary of State's audit indicates there's probably less jobs, but intuitively they say, well, this doesn't, out of the 25 requests and 19 reports back,
Three of the 19 are in compliance, but perhaps all 25 are in compliance one way or the other through divisions or whatever, and maybe there has been a default. So, yes, Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman, this information is required by statute since 1993, and we asked for this information in 1999 budget note. And now the department comes in and say, we will try to get good information for you next biennium. I mean, why for 8 years the department is not interested in complying with statutory requirements, which is very important information for us to know whether we are investing taxpayers' dollars where we want the result to be.
This has been in statute for a number of years, the requirements of reporting, Mr. Scott, is that right?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, and we have been collecting and reporting the information, although our 1997 biennial report omitted some of the information. We subsequently supplied it to the legislature. The 1997-99 biennial report, so that was a reporting issue. We have been reporting the required information to our commission on a regular basis throughout this period. However, I guess I'd say two things. One is we haven't been able to collect it in 100% of the cases, and we have, I guess I would say, recently redoubled our efforts to do so and to plug the holes in our system that make it possible for us to have less than complete information. The other thing is that the issue of the verification with the employment department is an issue that previously, that it is not something that's required by the statute, but it is something that we agree needs to be done and that we were already in discussions with them on doing so that we can have a system that the legislature has confidence in.
It's important that we have biannual reports with numbers that are not verified. It's very misleading to get unverified.
Sorry.
I want to ask Mr. Scott, when do you plan in the future to verify these projected job numbers? I thought you said 2 years.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, what we collect and what we intend to continue to collect is that at the time we make an award to the company, we would get two things from the company. One is an agreement that they would provide, make information available, and that they would request that the employment department allow us to verify it.
You're doing that now, Mr. Scott?
No, but we will be doing that at the beginning of the latter. We do the former now, the latter will begin doing the beginning of the biennium, the employment department part. We're in the process of modifying our forms now to
is that through the Department of Justice that's working with you on those? Or is that an internal issue, the forms?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. The Department of Justice always reviews our form contracts before we start using them. I'm not sure where we are in the process of doing that
okay.
with them at this point. I'm sorry, I'm afraid I've lost the question.
I'm sorry, and I did interrupt you. I think the question was as to when during the biennium you were going to be implementing the program for the report back, and you'd indicated that in the 97-99 it wasn't a complete report.
Sorry, I think that Senator Yee's question was the what we will ask the company for, we'll continue to ask the companies for, is to tell us at the time of the award how many jobs they expect to create within a certain period. That period currently varies by program. We are planning to, we may be in the process of kind of reviewing whether those periods are appropriate by program, because we think some of them are just historical, that, you know, one program got set up one way and one another way, and there's no real reason for a difference. But in some cases, there are reasons for differences. That is, our infrastructure programs, those that involve job creation, typically it is much longer from the time the award is made to the time that somebody would actually be working than it is in a program where we're providing a loan guarantee or something like that. So rather than, because some things have to be 2 or 3 years, we think that others should be more like a year or whatever the appropriate period is. But so we will, they'll be asked within a certain period, how many jobs will you create? That's the number we'll report. This is the predicted job creation. Then we will have a system in which we go back and verify at the end of the period, whichever period is, how many jobs were actually created, and then we'll report something about, you know, after the fact, our verification suggests that we, you know, our original predictions were over or under by such and such an amount.
Thank you. Further questions relative to the audit? Senator McGee?
My question is, how soon after the award of the project are you going to verify those employment numbers? And you say at the end of a period that the award team indicated. So is that going to, I think that you should verify those numbers not longer than a year, because longer than a year, you get overlap of different information.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, this is a real problem, and one I'm not sure we're ever going to get a really good solution to, because sometimes we will verify at the end of a period, and we'll tell the company, you know, we'll agree with the company on what the period is, but in some cases a year will not be the reasonable period within which the jobs would be created following the award, because often a facility has to be constructed, people have to be trained, they expect to phase in the facility over a period of time, and we make an award based on the fact that eventually there will be 200 people working somewhere, even though after a year they might only have 40 people working there because they're building it out at that rate, or that's their anticipation of how the market will develop, etc.
So even though on page 4 of the audit, the amounts of awards that were talked about here are referenced as being somewhere between $100,000 to $160,000, that's just bridge financing, so those total loans may have been many times that amount, and so those would be construction loans as opposed to operating loans, basically, and those operating loans are grants, or awards. On Appendix A, comes from page 4, the bottom of the first column and the top of the first, the middle column. For example, one firm receiving financial assistance of $160,799 had no employees time of financial award. Firm estimated that it would create 38 new jobs. Unemployment insurance data showed that 18 months later, the firm had created 15 jobs. Similar firm with 81 employees received a $100,000 award, proposed to create 40 new jobs. After 12 months, however, total employment was 85, an increase of only 4 jobs. So this would be some sort of a bridge finance or a get the rest of the way there between $100,000 and $161,000, basically, if I understand. Might have been $1 million loan that you were just assisting with, and it could have been that they were still in the process of building the building that would house these 40 jobs. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, I don't see any reason to think that these would be bridge loans or that this would only be a portion of the award. My assumption is this would be the whole award, but without knowing what program we're talking about or what the company's circumstance was, I can't really tell you how long it would be reasonable to expect for those jobs to be created. It varies by, obviously, by project, but also, you know, within individual programs tend to be fairly, you know, somewhat consistent within a range.
I think Mr. Lattimore took that into consideration when he prepared the graph on page 6. Do you think he took into consideration that maybe, for instance, project number 1 there, that it says it anticipates 3 new jobs, 6 months, 12 months, and 18 months, there was 0, 0, and 1, and then at the end of 24 months, it was 7. So, and he says that complied, basically. Maybe that was a construction. I don't know. Again, without knowing what it was.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, you know, many of us have been in business, and, you know, things don't always kind of go the way that you think they're going to, and often, particularly when you're predicting that at a period a year or 2 years out, you know, and something might happen 6 months sooner, it might happen 6 months later, and so it's that's the inherently tricky nature of this, and I think we all know that.
Would show that, wouldn't it?
Well, the business plan would show that, but I'm not familiar with any business that has actually managed to hit its business plan numbers right on. Usually, they're either higher or lower in terms of revenue or profits or employees or whatever you have.
I was looking at 0 at 6 months out and at 12 months out. Maybe it was anticipated that would be 0. And that the employees really wouldn't start to come on until the 18th month and to the 24th month, and thus they were in compliance. Whereas, take for instance number 7, which was going to create 15 new jobs, and there was already 22 jobs, so the total job expected was 37. At the end of 6 months, they were at 21 jobs, down 1, and the response was that it does not confirm the OECD's job report. Now, I think in that analysis, the indication was that the actual according to Appendix A. It summarizes the results of our testing. It shows that we were able to obtain unemployment insurance data on 19 out of the 25 firms in our sample. We compared the data with the department's reports of jobs created, retained, and wage levels. And it sounds like that they are reporting to you, and you are reporting back, according to what Senator Yee is indicating, that there is, in fact, jobs that have been created or retained or that have started up. And I don't know. Again, I'm looking at it and saying, well, if it's the fact that they've got to build a building and then order the machine to go in the building and get started, might very well be that it's 18 months out and they're absolutely in compliance with 0 jobs created. But I don't know. If that's what's happening here, but it appears, at least in my reading of the Secretary of State's audit report, that the department was in violation of their own reporting requirements, that the jobs that were created, retained, and the job wage levels were not as reported by the department. That's just my reading of it. Could be wrong.
Mr. Chair, I would just go back and say that we need to be absolutely clear that what we report is not jobs already created. It's jobs predicted to be created at the time we make the awards. And we have never reported data other than on an ad hoc kind of special case basis for jobs, if you will, actually created or after the fact reported. We have, as I said, on a number of special studies or in certain programs have done actual verifications, but those aren't the numbers we routinely report when we talk about jobs created as a result of our programs. What we're really reporting is jobs predicted to be created.
Senator Yee?
Chairman, if the department has plans to verify them in the future, I think that will be an improvement, because telling us projections doesn't really tell us anything.
I think, Senator Yee, that what Director Scott is telling us is that the mechanism, the wheels are in, getting in motion now to go ahead and begin to provide or accumulate to provide that information so that that reporting can be done and can be done to the satisfaction of future ways and means in the future.
That's yet to be seen.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Because this has been required for 8 years and it hasn't happened. So, well.
Okay. Further issues then with the actual audit report, Director Scott, that you wanted to share with us?
Mr. Chair, no. I think that's really all I had to say, is that we are planning to comply with the recommendations in the audit, but I just wanted to give you some flavor for the complications of doing so. If the committee would be interested, we've been working with Mike Greenfield on what we're calling a corrective action plan, and we reviewed it with John Latimer, and I could just share with you a draft of that corrective action plan.
It's
kind of a work in progress.
Great. Excellent.
But it pretty much just goes over the territory that I just described. This is
excellent. Thank you. And then let's see, additional information. I think we had
the last thing I have for you, and maybe it's the next last thing, is there's I previously provided the questions from Thursday. We have copies somewhere here of the responses.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. There was one more question on the auditor's report from Senator Yee. Senator Yee is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My other question is, why did the projected jobs created drop 50% from one biennium to the next, from 95-97 to 97-99, even with funding increase?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we've answered that question a couple of times in the written materials, and it'll be a third time in the ones that we're about to pass out that are responses to Representative Johnson's question. The 95-97 biennium, there are really two main explanations for it. First of all, is that 95-97 was a... historically unprecedented period of job growth for the target sector industries that the department works with in Oregon, and that was when we had the more than $12 billion of semiconductor investment. We had a number of very large projects that were 1,000 or 2,000 jobs each that caused that particular biennium to have a very large number of jobs we assisted in creating. The second reason is that it was in 1997 that the legislature endorsed the change of direction proposed by our commission to focus on rural and distressed communities, so that instead of focusing our efforts on making it easier for some of the large companies from overseas or out of state to invest primarily in the urban areas in Oregon, we began redirecting our efforts and our programs toward communities that can't site very large facilities, and so we end up with much smaller projects that are more difficult to conclude. Is partly a policy change and partly just a change in the economic situation.
Okay.
whole. Mr. Chairman, follow up?
Follow up, Senator Yee.
So in view of the fact that there is much slower growth when you redirected your efforts toward smaller communities, are you going to make any change in future strategies for job growth?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we've, I think, suggested in the answer to other questions, we have some specific strategies that we think will enable us to have more success in the rural and distressed areas creating jobs than we've had to date. We've managed to kind of have some, gather some momentum there, but we think we can accelerate that further. We're close to launching a statewide marketing effort for business location that is in partnership with a lot of the smaller, more rural, or the entities that serve the smaller, more rural areas, and are really focusing on generating more leads from companies that might locate in those areas. We're also have some initiatives going to introduce Portland companies to some of those rural to some of those rural communities. So, and plus we've been investing in a lot of our infrastructure, business park type investments in those areas. We think all of those things will cause us to have some continued increases in our success in stimulating job creation in the more rural and distressed communities of the state.
You didn't say that in your answer to us when I asked the question. Why the 50% drop? So it is because of 1 year's unusual investment and because of the change in focus in our investment. You're not recommending any changes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, yes, we are, and we are undertaking changes.
And will you tell us what the changes?
Well,
I was interrupted, so.
I'm sorry. There are three things. One of them we've been doing for several years, which is to focus our infrastructure investments in the rural and distressed areas. And while we've been doing that for a few years, those projects, as you know, sometimes take several years from the time people identify a need for it until you actually get into construction. We now have a lot more actual construction going on and capacity created in rural communities that wasn't there 5 years ago. The second strategy is that we are undertaking a, I guess I would say, a fairly systematic effort in conjunction with the Portland Development Commission and an organization called Community Oregon that is focused on introducing Portland companies to rural Oregon communities. And we're in the process of calling jointly with the Portland Development Commission, calling on companies in Portland that we think might be candidates for expansion that we think are going to have trouble finding the land or the employees that they need in the Portland area, and trying to introduce them to some of their options. And that's, we've had quite a bit of success with that in the last couple of years, and we've got, now we're getting more systematic about reaching out to those, trying to identify who we think the companies are and reaching out to them. The third is that we are actually just this coming weekend launching a, we call it a marketing campaign. It's not, that's a pretty big word for something that's not very fancy, but in conjunction with the Oregon Economic Development Association, which is an organization of 25 or 30 local or regional economic development organizations around the state, we've been working for about the past year on a marketing plan that really is identifying target companies and target industries that might locate in rural or distressed areas, and specifically focusing on what's the marketing message and how do we reach them. And the purpose of it is to generate more leads, generate more companies that are asking to be shown sites in rural Oregon. This next weekend, the biggest organization of corporate location consultants and corporate real estate executives is meeting in Seattle for their international meeting. And we, with our Economic Development Association partners, are kind of really, is our first real effort to reach out to the companies that are targets in that and start to hit them with a consistent message about locating in rural Oregon.
What are you offering them, Bill? What's a typical package maybe look like?
Mr. Chair, that varies by community quite a bit. All our analysis shows that Oregon's costs are generally very competitive in the first place, and that our incentives enable us to compete for, you know, almost everything we see successfully with the states that we actually get into competition with, and different local communities are willing to, you know, they either have enterprise zones or they don't, and they may or may not be able to put cash on the table or provide a reduced price site or that kind of thing. We don't feel that lack of incentives is a barrier to this. A lot of it is local capacity and marketing and sites, and that's what we've been working on.
Is land use planning a large factor in that, Bill?
Mr. Chair, I would say overall, land use planning is a plus for Oregon because I think the reputation among corporate site selectors is that you don't have the ad hoc review of a project that goes on to some extent in other states. The downside of Oregon's land use system is that if a community doesn't have an appropriate site prepared, it may take them longer to get it ready to market than it might in another state.
This is a various zoning hearing.
Yeah, because they have to go through more process.
Okay. I still like my House Bill 3770. I'm gonna pitch it in as much as we're down to two other members on the committee, and that is, you know, it goes to places for businesses that are new to Oregon and economically distressed communities wherever they're at. They can be rural or they can be metropolitan, but it can only go to small cities of under 10,000. So
is that just the one that waives taxes for a certain period of time?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Something that is easily targeted, easily understood. Even the accountant can understand that, you know, after pitching it three or four times, Representative Ringo. I spoke with Ms. Penwell about it the other day. I get more and more excited about it, but I think you call it your enhanced enterprise zone that you presently have, but it has a factor of eight different items that have to be worked through and my understanding was that went in like 1995 session, and to this point there's only 95 or 97 and there's only one business that's taken advantage of it at this particular point. So I look at that and I say, well, must be something wrong.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot.
Yeah, if you've got a great program but only one business is taking advantage of it. So we got to make it easier. I know that Representative Ringo doesn't want seven giant multinational corporations to come land in his particular town and be his new neighbors necessarily, but I would love to be able to provide an incentive for small businesses of under 25, under 50 employees to be able to come to Oregon and offer them enough incentive to come to Oregon and
one of my, well, Judge White, who sits on your state commission, last week indicated what happens if they made $100,000. If they made $100,000, they wouldn't be thinking of moving out of Burns, Oregon right now. You've got to make it attractive enough that they'll want to come and have them have enough positive vibrations about the community itself that they'll want to stay. Is there refreshments being served down the hall? Is that what's happening? I must be missing something. Everybody's now been gone one time or another. So. At any rate, I'm sorry. And let's see, the last item I had, assuming we've gotten through the audit, the questions on the audit, were the questions which had been previously presented to you, Director Scott, dealing with the questions. And where's the best place to start on that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what you're asking.
Where's the best place you've got? We've got items handed out here.
Mr. Chair, we had 55 questions from Representative Johnson. Here are our best shot at the answers, and I wouldn't necessarily propose to walk through all those answers, but we're happy to try to explain or elaborate either now or at any member's convenience.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
I appreciate the fact that this was a voluminous request, and I'm just glancing through this right now. It seems to be a pretty comprehensive answer. I appreciate the amount of effort that went into doing it, and I'd like to have the opportunity to read this thoughtfully and come back, and if I have any questions, to raise them.
Specifically any single question that you want to look at, Representative Johnson, that it may... that it may be responsive to direct itself to some specific issue. I know that at lunchtime when you and I visited that you had specific questions that you had presented.
I did, and it is unique to my district, and I don't want to take the committee's time looking at it. It's the written explanation of what happened with the money that was left on the table as a result of the recruitment of United States Gypsum, and frankly, I just haven't found it in the material that they've passed out. So, if you give me a second, I'll take a look.
You bet. And then Senator Yee, did you?
Okay. Yes. Well, I submitted a list of questions yesterday.
I think early on, Director Scott indicated that those were still in the process of being worked out. I'm sorry, Senator, we do not have that back before we return today. There is a list of the questions identify the impact of reductions in your travel budget from range 1 to 10% in-state, out-of-state.
Hey, Mr. Chair, these were some questions that Senator Clarno relayed through committee staff, and she asked for some detail on our travel expenses as well as for some impact on potential cuts. We provided the impact on potential cuts, and we provided some more detail than we did before. She actually asked for breakdowns by trip, which is extraordinarily time-consuming to reconstruct given the way our record-keeping is done, and we may want to meet with Senator Clarno separately to see if she wants us to go ahead and do it, or if we can provide something else that would meet her needs.
I will say this, and I come from a unique part of the state in relationship to the department, but once given the opportunity to attend meetings by mail, by telephone, interactive voice. I don't know that you'll ever get it back to Portland ever again, but it is most rewarding to be able to attend the meetings and to be able to feel the enthusiasm of some of the other members, particularly the high caliber members that you have on the International Trade Commission. And I recognize that a goodly portion of those folks who attend are right there from the immediate valley. The Senate representing Senator Avell Gordley and then the members, with the exception of Tony Flagg and Tom Costable and Catherine Nader, coming up from a couple of other places in Eastern Oregon. But I have found that the tremendous amount of energy that's exuded at those meetings is really, really great. But so far as traveling, you know, all the way across the state to attend those meetings, and I guess Cindy Beck travels from Bend, and I think my most recent experience is that even Cindy was participating more by telephone. So maybe that's, as we get to the point where we end up with, everybody ends up with a television on their screen, on their interactive video, computer monitors, we'll feel the excitement and energy and be able to do so from hundreds and hundreds of miles away. So, but I wanted to share that. I have traveled a little bit back and forth, and it's so much easier to do it by telephone, even if the meeting takes 4 hours. Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see Mr. Burton here, and it, with the Chair's indulgence, if I could just direct a question to him, it'll save us hunting each other by phone.
Come forward, Mr. Burton.
And again, I apologize to Senator Yee for you for making this such a specific question.
No, not at all.
Thank you. I read the explanation that you wrote, and it's at first blush, just a quick pass through it. It seems true.
Sure, which question is under?
I'm sorry. Question number 44. But now I'm switching back over to question number 3, where I actually asked how much money had been expended on the recruitments of 3 companies, one of which has settled in my district, one of which has almost settled in my district, and one of which has vaporized. And in the explanation of how much money was expended for United States Gypsum, on the bottom of page 2, right before question number 4, it says approximately $319,000 for site fill and grading. Was that a grant made to the port?
Representative Johnson, Chair Butler, that amount was expended by the Port of St. Helens. And as I recall, I wasn't personally involved in the project, but it's my understanding that was an escrow account that was left from the purchase price by U.S. Gypsum.
Correct. It had the net effect of reducing the purchase price of the whole site by $419,000, and the port negotiated it. The port negotiated it down to $319,000. And what I was trying to understand was whether or not you had made a cash award or a grant or a loan to the port to make up that difference.
Representative Johnson, Chair Butler, the department did not. That was a reduction. Had the effect of a reduction in the purchase price of the land. That was a contribution to the project, if you will, from the port.
I think a remaining question that still has to be asked is, if DSL sold that property to the port under a contract, was the port required to sell the property for a fixed amount? And if so, is it the fixed amount less $319,000? So I wonder if DSL knows that has occurred, and that's something that I'll explore. But I wanted to just make sure that this was not a grant to make the port whole, and you've said it's not. Thank you.
Well, that's a lot of money, isn't it? On that overall project.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I just want to be sure everybody understands this is not representative of a typical project. This is by far the biggest state investment in a project in my tenure as director, by probably a multiple, and I think probably in the history of the department, and there are a variety of factors that came together to cause that. Partly there was a lot of infrastructure required, some of which benefits others besides this one company, but then also we discovered a major seismic stabilization issue pretty far down the road, and after much hand-wringing, the governor and everybody finally decided the right thing to do was to for the state to make a significant contribution to resolving the problem.
And that's this $1.5 million for site stabilization after sizing problems were discovered?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Did the company eventually locate where they had agreed to locate then?
Mr. Chair, you can see, though, from the complexity of this transaction,
yes,
that my renewed pleas for a single file memorializing a deal of this magnitude. The state has made an investment. You can count up the zeros here and figure out how much it is. It's a huge amount of money. And I think that it is incumbent on the state, given that they are the lead economic development agency, to require that all of their partners provide data so that there is a single file residing somewhere. In the case that we have to go back 10 years from now and discover that $1.5 million for site stabilization wasn't enough or there were some kind of issues with it. I mean, God forbid that Mr. Scott or Mr. Burton get hit by a bus, but a lot of the data about this is scattered in different places. And I don't know if the state has a responsibility to have the file residing someplace.
We did discuss the one file issue earlier on in the presentation, and I think that the department would be has been well advised. It would be a good idea, of course, as Director Scott says, with the magnitude of this is as a multiple, a few times over, of being the largest single project ever undertaken by the department.
And one of considerable complexity. And frankly, I applaud the department for the work that they did on it. We now have a plant that I drive by every day.
How many jobs?
About 120, as I recall. I don't know how many.
I think it's in here somewhere.
Is it how many were actually created? The other question is how many of those souls end up being from the zip codes in the surrounding area, and that piece of it I still
Mr.
don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think the answer is in here. I think they were their ultimate expectation is 150-some jobs. There are like 118 or 112 currently, of which 80%, 85% are local, Oregon.
85% from Columbia County, 5% from Classic County, the remaining 10% from adjoining counties.
With the chair's permission, is that verified?
Yes.
Would you like to come forward, Sherry?
I apologize for
speaking
the bag. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, Sherry Shine, Deputy Director with the Department. As you probably know, with our special public works project, there is a requirement of periodic on-site monitoring. This project happens to be one that just recently received the on-site monitoring. During the monitoring, our staff not only makes the site visits, look at the progress of the project, but at the same time look into the payroll records that existed. Out of the 112 employees on the payroll, 85% were residents of Columbia County, 5% Clatsop County, the other 10% from the adjoining counties. And they also made, and these are what we call family wage jobs, which means above county average. The note in the file also noted, I believe, 31 positions. I was just looking in our answers here. It's noted, all of these statistics are noted in the response, in this package. There is a trucking company that has staffed up by 30 positions in order to provide the increased shipping needs for U.S. gypsum. And one other point that I should note is for special public works projects which involve capital construction, typically the company has 2 years to meet the job generation requirement. They are not there they will be there to where the end of this year. So our anticipation is more jobs will be created, and the additional monitoring will log that information.
I'm delighted to hear that, and it's my intention to excerpt that answer out of this packet that you've provided me and to provide it to the local press. Because I think part of the difficulty is with the department, the story of your successes is not widely told. The story of the deficiencies is repeated often. And in this particular instance, I would like to be the source, through the answers that you've provided, of refuting the allegation that these are not local jobs. And I think 85% residence is terribly important. If I were going to delve deeper into this, I'd want to know how many of these 85% residents were residents in Rainier and in the surrounding zip codes and thereby got the jobs versus how many have moved here from Kentucky and are now Columbia County residents. So that would be the next level of inquiry that I'd want to take this to. And perhaps on a project of this magnitude, it could be instructive to see what actually occurred if you go down into that 85% a little deeper. But the fact that 85% of the folks work in Columbia County is extraordinary. And that's exactly how the project was supposed to turn out. So thank you.
Let me ask this, 112 jobs?
Mr. Chair, yes.
It comes out, based on the money that I see, of just under 200,000 a job. Is that typical?
Mr. Chairman, I indicate no, that's not typical. Our, I guess I would say our kind of rule of thumb is we're generally looking for well under $5,000 a job when we're considering cash ratios. That doesn't mean we won't stretch for a distressed community and so on, but.
Well, that's a stretch.
No, this would be, and we might consider the not just the direct jobs, but the indirect jobs. But we certainly we actually there was a study done by the state economist 6 or 7 years ago that indicates that for a typical manufacturing job in Oregon, there's a present value to the state in maybe in the range of $15,000 or $20,000 per job in terms of the income tax receipts that we might expect to come from a $30,000 a year job.
Input output study essentially.
Yes, it was an in-plan model study. But we have normally used a kind of a rule of thumb of, you know, less than 5,000 and in any event less than 10,000 is where we try to stay with state resources.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go on. We have the Public Affairs Committee opening up in a few minutes, and I need to scoot. I just request this handout
yes.
that we were
mm-hmm.
given today in response to my questions on travel and reduction of travel is based on the 9901 budget, not on what they are asking in the requested budget, but I cannot get any of the figures matching up, and I wonder if I could request LFO if they would please work with the agency, because there's the 9901 shows 894,000 in in-state travel, and this information they provided me today is 816,000 out-of-state travel in the 9901, and the budget book shows 477,000. This one they gave me today is 205,000, and so on and so forth. So I would like very much to find out which figures are correct, and if we could also have just a breakdown. I've been going through the different classifications and the salaries. I assume the executive manager one position, which is $9,135 a month, is a salary for the executive director. There are several at $7,500, several at $6,500, several at $5,900, and I would like to know exactly, it's very difficult to try to go through here because these are all mixed up by various departments, of how many salaries we have at least over $5,000 a month in this agency.
Okay, you've got this broken down by the various divisions of the department.
Well, if that's not necessary, that may be a little harder for LFO. It would be nice to be able to just have it on one piece of paper that this department has so many managers, manager G's at 7,500, and how many manager E's at 5,900, And the only one I said, like I say, is the only one I found at 9,135 was the one position. I'm assuming that must be the director's position. But if we could have a clarification on that, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And we'll work with that. Robin, you'll work with the department.
Thanks, Robin. I know you're overworked anyway, but I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Connell. And Representative Johnson?
As long as Robin's going to be opening this for clarification, could I ask for a clarification of meals and lodging for non-employees at $106,000? That's in the 9901. I'm just glancing at these. Air transportation for non-employees. Who would be the non-employees that we'd be flying or buying food for? Or lodging for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, we'll take a stab, but we can provide you detail on that. The non-employee category essentially means that it wasn't on a expense account filed by an employee. So, for instance, it could be that these are employees that we bought a block of rooms at our conference for. It's possible that some of that actually was employees, and we can get that for you. The non-employees we would otherwise be providing, probably the bulk of that would be for speakers at our annual conference. But we can get you a detail and find out. I'm just guessing at this point what it actually is.
I've been to your annual conference, and it's wonderful. But, Mr. Scott, if you're paying guys $109,000 for that annual conference... It's odd. In-state meals for board and commission members is $137, which seems so modest. And then meals and lodging for non-employees jumps up to $106,000.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm sure it's not as silly as it looks. We'll get to the answer.
Thank you.
other questions in regard to the information that's been handed out today, and we are up against both committees as well as House floor. Robin, we have you, and then Lisa is number three on the list today.
I had nothing to present. I just simply listed the people who are involved in this budget.
Monica's here today, but colleagues, what's your pleasure relative to further discussions on the current budget? We need to start to work on, I'll be real frank with you, I need to have an opportunity to go through some of the issues. You folks do too. Maybe private meetings could be set up in the office next door with various members, as long as we don't go to a quorum issue with the fiscal staff of the OECDD.
Using the 1-3 time.
Yeah, just using the 1-3 time. Robin, how would you feel about that? Again, as long as we don't go to a quorum issue so that the questions could be asked. And
I would appreciate knowing what it is folks want to talk about so I can be prepared for it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I can share one thing right now that might be useful. It's been obvious to, I think, some of us over the course of the time that we've been here how complex this department is, and the fact that complexity has grown as a result of 10 years, roughly, of additional statutory responsibilities being assigned to the agency. I don't know when the last time that there was a comprehensive review of all of the statutes that pertain to the agency, so that there could perhaps be some legislative review about really cumulatively what business have we asked this agency to be in. And I would like to have the opportunity to explore more fully with some of my colleagues on the panel that I've had brief conversations with, as well as the staff, to see whether or not we might craft some kind of a budget note that would speak to an interim committee that would comprehensively look at the accumulation of statutory responsibilities. Because I'm not sure that in this forum we're going to sort out some of the budget or all of the budget issues that all of us have raised, both privately to you and publicly with the agency. And I'd like to see if we could at least explore a mechanism by which there could be a thoughtful review that would involve the agency and would maybe over the course of the interim bring some clarity and really make the work of the agency easier without going through budget hearings that result in them probably doing nothing but for the last 3 weeks except responding to questions from the panel.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to explore that too. I'm not sure the best way to do that, quite frankly, because I think that a comprehensive review will be extremely time-consuming. So a lot depends on what we mean by that. So it may be that we need to try to work on a work plan and cost out what we think that we're looking at so that we can talk to legislative leadership, because the department itself did, at the direction of the legislature, a review of itself a biennia ago, but that was agency driven, and that was an extremely intensive effort. And if in fact the legislature is wanting to look at all of the statutes, there's probably a significant amount of legislator time and legislative staff time that would be required to do that. So I think it might be helpful if maybe we sat down and chatted about how thorough we're talking about and what we think it might take in terms of legislator and staff resources.
I think that's a very good idea. Mr. Chair, I've had, as I shared with you, one brief conversation with leadership about this as a direction to go. It did not get down into a level of defining comprehensive, and perhaps that's my lack of art in picking that word, nor did it touch on the financial requirements. We did talk about the necessity of having this be a staffed committee, given that the work is going to be intense, particularly some research, so there will be a fiscal impact with it. But with the chair's permission, I would very much like to explore with you what the possibilities are and then to further refine this concept with leadership.
And I think that you're working with some committee chairs that can assist and accommodate you as well as with leadership, Representative Johnson. Senator Yee?
I submitted a list of questions yesterday, mm-hmm. and I just want to know when would I be able to get the answer?
I think that
my work within the subcommittee depends on the information
yes.
I receive.
Bill?
Mr. Chair, we'll have some of them tomorrow, but we think some of them it'll be the end of the week. We'll get to as many as we can tomorrow.
Okay.
So it'll be submitted here at 1 o'clock?
What?
We would plan on meeting then tomorrow.
Yes,
and questions.
I think probably bringing over to tomorrow and at least for a portion of a meeting, but we will carry over Senate Bill 5510 to tomorrow as a
I
public
think that's
hearing.
Scheduled.
Okay.
For the public hearing?
We'll call it public hearing, Senator, so that
we can meet in
and certainly mm-hmm. Afterwards, immediately after the public portion, you could meet privately to get.
I will have to see if the room is available.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What is the public portion of it?
Well, getting the questions answered on tape that need to be on the public record, and then
I see.
With any of the, for instance, the U.S. Gypsum and other Nucor and other folks.
I don't want to take the committee's time in delving into too many of these district-specific. I appreciate the stab they've made at the answers, and I just would like to afford them the courtesy of reading them thoughtfully as they prepared them.
Well, I appreciate your sensitivity, Representative Johnson.
Is
Senator Yee?
Is there a way we can number these answers?
I think
so
they've got them by day.
I know they're identified by day, but I just want to make sure I didn't lose any.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, I had asked that the department, if we're pretty well wrapped up with asking questions, that they do a compilation of all of the answers,
yes.
the questions
mm-hmm.
and answers that they have given us. So,
you mean in the big?
Yeah.
Okay. We're working on it. We've got it organized by subject matter. So, like, we have a section on performance measures and a section on kind of program operations and section on tourism and so on, and we should I think we'll have that tomorrow probably with the answers we have so far, at least.
And Robin, the respective budgets for each of those divisions, those are just in the book, is that right? Is there a summary
summary walk that's done by Department of Administrative Services of each of the subdivisions?
I don't know.
I'd like to reach out and be able to get my arms around that.
Okay, you're talking about them doing, I know that they did that for DCDS.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we could ask DAS to do the same thing for each of the divisions.
I would really like that. I've struggled looking through various one-inch thick sections of various notebooks, and I just feel like that there's some numbers there that I could reach out and start with. If I knew the total that I'm looking for, then I'll know what the pieces of the pie will add up to.
Well, the LSO overview that I gave you does have a worksheet for each, but that's just numbers. The crosswalk that DAS did and DCBS had both the numbers and the description.
Right.
So,
that would be most helpful. With that, we will adjourn until even hour tomorrow for another public hearing on Senate Bill 5510. Thank you very much.